Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servo-Didio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Tonight's guest is Tom Tackett. Tom Tackett is a behaviorist and competition dog trainer based in Orange County, California, since 1977. As a recognized authority on obedience and protection training, Tom has appeared as an expert witness in court cases and on numerous local television programs. Competitive in Schutzhund trials, he won the first all-Rottweiler national Schutzhund third trial in Florida in 1985 with a perfect score of 100 points in protection. Tom was certified as a Schutzhund trial decoy by the German Rottweiler Club. He also trains service dogs with the emphasis on autism and PTSD, aggressive behaviors. Protection and import services are also available upon request. Tackett Service Dogs, Inc. has been recognized by the Wounded Marine Semper Fi Fund, Wounded Warrior Battalion, Wounded Warrior Project, and the Patriotic Service Dog Foundation. Tom, welcome to Insight into Healing, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you, Alexis. Alexa, thanks for having us.
Thank you, yes. So tell us, how did you get started with service dogs, with training service dogs?
Well, I trained protection dogs and police dogs for many, many years. And in 2004, my daughter was diagnosed with cancer. And going to all the doctor visits and that type of thing to the hospitals, it was really wearing on her and very stressful, and she asked if we could start taking her friend's Labrador with us and train him to go with her. And, of course, we thought that was a great idea, and we did. And so bringing Indy to the visits was amazing what I started seeing. It made her so much more comfortable and relaxed and took a lot of the anxiety out of waiting there. And it started doing the same thing to others in the room. When you go to that many visits, you run into a lot of the same people. And so we would show up and you'd hear people say, oh, Indy's here. And so I just watched this and I go, kind of like a light went on. I go, I really like this and this is what I want to get into. So I don't do the protection as much anymore. So we've really put our focus on the service dogs. And we've limited it to primarily.
Sorry, we lost you there for a second.
Okay. So we're training service dogs now primarily for PTSD for wounded veterans and also kids with autism. And so that's how pretty much how we got into it. So for about the first 3 years of working with veterans that were being referred to us from Camp Pendleton, my training director and I agreed to work with them for free, just donate our time because they really couldn't afford to do it. And we weren't about to turn them away. So some friends were watching what we were doing, and they go, hey, Tom, you can't keep doing this. Why don't we form a nonprofit that can help raise funds to help support Tackett Service Dogs so you can train more dogs and do a bigger and better job? So that was a great idea. So we looked into it, and we did, and we named it Patriotic Service Dog Foundation. And it is up and running now and really starting to take off. In fact, we just came back from New York delivering one of our dogs to our veterans, Glenn Moody, in New York, Long Island, and had a fundraiser there, actually, that turned out fabulous last month. It was really, really terrific. A lot of fun.
Yes, yes. And it's amazing. I mean, both for you, for the animal, and also for the person that is obtaining the dog. It's such a powerful tool. And I think we were discussing before the show, there's a huge difference between a therapy dog and a service dog. Would you be able to tell us the difference?
You bet. A therapy dog is a very well-trained dog that goes to hospitals, assisted living homes, that type of facility. And they're for comforting the patients that are there, and they go in for visits. And we go to the VA hospital a lot with our therapy dogs and other assisted living homes as well. And we also have what we call tutors with tails. It's a reading program that we put together for the third graders at a local school here. We're in our fourth year of doing it with our therapy dogs. And it's worked out really well. It's really a lot of fun. So a therapy dog is a comfort dog. A service dog, the type that we teach, again, is PTSD and autism. The definition of a service dog is a dog that is trained to perform a minimum of 3 tasks that mitigates a person's handicap. So typically what we teach our PTSD dogs are a block. People with PTSD don't like people coming up real close to them and getting into their space. So the dog will stand as a buffer between them. So you tell the dog to block, he will stand in front of the handler, so it gives a space and a buffer for the people that are in front of them. We also teach them to cover me. So we tell the dog to cover. The dog comes around from the left side where they normally are in the heel position, and they come around and sit on your right side facing behind you and covering your back. So if you're at the ATM or at a cash register checkout, you tell the dog, cover me, and the dog comes around and covers your back so people don't come up real close behind you. We also teach them to search a building. So if you come home, again, a lot of times they don't like to go into a building that isn't cleared. So they come home, the dog will come in, the dog will flip on the light for them and search the house, come back, and basically say it's all clear, and then the handler can come in and be comfortable and at ease coming into their own home even. One of the biggest things we teach and the best is what we refer to as interrupt. And what that is if the handler is going into a nightmare or having a problem like that, then the dog will come over and interrupt them. So typically, it depends on the person, what their signal is to the dog. Let's just say, for instance, the person puts their hands over their face and they're struggling right now. So the dog sees that, we come running over and jump up on them and start licking their face and getting them back to what's referred to as here and now. So those are some of the tasks that we teach. Also to stand and brace for anybody that has balance issues. And so that's a lot of what we do.
I mean, that is so impressive and incredible. How long, I mean, just to teach one of those commands, how long does it take to teach an animal all of those? That's really some very intensive training, I would think.
It really is. We do an evaluation on the dogs, whether they're puppies or young adults that we take into the training program. And if they pass our tests, which basically we want to see a dog that's very friendly, very social, very clear-minded, and willing to either retrieve or has a really good food drive, or both is really nice. So if we have those dogs are selected. And then dog needs to be at least 18 months to be certified. So if we start with an 8 or 10-week-old puppy, you know, we're looking at pretty much a year and a half before we can get them certified. So it's a lot of training, absolutely a lot of work, and a lot of training and work for the handler and or the trainer and the dogs. So if we get a young adult, it takes a minimum of 6 months, typically.
Wow. And are you doing these trainings every day? I mean, especially for a young puppy, how much can a puppy kind of absorb? I mean, is it every day, every couple of times a week? What's usually the schedule?
We train every day. We give a break on Sunday. But now you'd be amazed.
So it's a job
training
for them.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a job, but it's fun. If you see the training in person, you'll be amazed. The dogs are extremely happy because, again, we select dogs that like to work. So they're bred for it, and these individual dogs are really liking this work, and they look forward to it. So we keep the lessons very short, very fun, very enthusiastic, very easy for them to be successful. We use a lot of treats in the initial training for the luring part, and they really do enjoy it. But it is a lot of work.
Yes. We actually have a question from the chat room. Mary Kay asked,
okay,
what breed are service dogs and or therapy dogs?
Well, any breed can be, including mixed breeds. We choose Labradors, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds, Doodles. We like the Doodles a lot, the Labradoodle, the Golden Doodle. So, and we do have mixed breeds in our program. And so pretty much any breed can. So it's really the more individual dog that we test for.
Wow. I know you had shown me a picture of one of your dogs. I think it was a doodle. It had just the most amazing face. I just remember seeing the pictures of that dog. It was just so incredible. But you can really see the joy and the passion in these animals.
Yeah, that was probably Charlie. He's a,
yes.
a big white Labradoodle that's 13 months. We have just teamed him up with a active duty Army major that's local here. And it's really pretty neat. It's pretty fun to watch them together.
How does someone get teamed up with a dog? How does the process all begin?
Well, typically we either get an email or a phone call. We get them literally every day. And I talk to the people. I like to talk to them on the phone after we email. But the minimum requirements are fill out an application. We email you the application. And we need a letter from the doctor stating that they feel a service dog would benefit them. And then we ask them to come out and meet us. So obviously if they're out of state, it's a little more difficult. But I absolutely want to meet the person in person. And yeah. The way I feel is successful is if I know that person and get to know them for a few days, then I can help place the right dog with them. And that's the key part of it is the proper match. If the match is right, things are beautiful and it works out really well.
Yes. I think that brought up a really important point, even for people who do not have service dogs or therapy dogs. When picking out a dog, it's not just picking out what's cute. It's really about finding the relationship and finding the personality and what works and what you are looking for and what type of personality the dog has.
That's true. But that's true even for a normal family pet. But as a service dog or a working dog, it's very important that the match is right and the personalities are really good.
How many times does a person come to train with the dog, to meet with a dog, before you can say, okay, this will be your match, and then from there, training the dog until he goes to his new handler?
Well, I'll use Glenn Moody as an example. Glenn went through the process, like I explained, the application and the letter, and then Glenn came out for, I think, 4 days and worked with us, met with us. I showed him 3 different dogs that we had that were available. And he and I both agreed wholeheartedly on Indy. And her name is Independence, and so we call her Indy. And it's really worked out really well. So then he came back and worked with us again for 10 days or 12 days. And that was really good. It worked out real well again. And so then my wife and I took Indy back to visit Glenn in New York for that fundraiser I was referring to and
yes.
Spent 4 days there with him. And then we left Indy with him right now, and he's going to be bringing Indy back to work with us again for 2 weeks next month. And then in April or May, we will certify her and probably take her back to New York to get her certified there, or Glenn will come out here and do it.
Amazing.
So, but if somebody is local, we also have classes. So we have our service dog classes twice a week, and that's somebody that has their own dog or that we've paired them up with a dog. And so they come out a minimum of twice a week, and that's in our agreement that they can and will do that. And dogs that we keep and train to place, we train them every day, quite often 2 or 3 times a day, and take them everywhere and anywhere we can think of, trains, buses, elevators, escalators, any kind of scenario, stairs, slippery floors. They need to be able to go anywhere because that's what's going to happen to them when they get paired up and get out into the real world with the handler.
Yes. And I was at that fundraiser, and, I saw with Indy, I mean, it was a crowded fundraiser. It was, wall-to-wall people. There was noise. And that dog, it was so incredible, was next to Glenn, was focused on Glenn, was watching Glenn. I mean, it was really an amazing thing to watch how close those two have become in such a short time.
Yes, it really is. And that's what's amazing about it. When that works that way, it's really beautiful to see. And so far, all of our dogs have worked out that way. And we've had 100% success doing it so far.
So where do you get these dogs? Do you get them from different breeders or different companies that tell you that I have this type of dog? Or is it just really seeing what's out there?
Well, a little bit of everything. we have breeders that we work with. We have a really great breeder, Eagle's Nest Labradors in Central California, and they really support our program. They will donate puppies to us. We will buy some of the puppies. Other people donate the puppies to us and help. We have a great doodle breeder in Oklahoma, Okie Pups. They're great, and all the dogs we've gotten from them have been just fabulous. And then we also have another breeder in Wisconsin for our golden retrievers, and they have really, really worked out well. So that's primarily where we get them. Some people do offer us dogs at times, and we check and we test them. We test a lot of dogs, and we turn away a lot of dogs because a lot of dogs are just not suitable for this type of work.
Mm-hmm. And would you ever get a – I mean, would a rescue dog ever be qualified or some a dog from
absolutely.
A shelter? Would that – okay, that's great.
Yes, absolutely. We have a couple rescues in our group right now.
And what is really a disqualifying factor for a dog or something that really stands out that you can say, okay, we've tried a lot, but this just won't work as a service dog?
Well, when we test them, we pretty much know, and that's what I was saying. When we test the dogs, we really haven't had any washouts. And what we test for, if a dog shows any signs of aggression or fear, they don't make it. We just don't even go any further. So if they are very friendly, social, outgoing, confident in a new environment, then we continue to work with them and test them. And we'll take them to different locations, different noises, things like that. And then, again, we test it for their retrieve drive and then their food drive. If a dog likes food, then we can use food as a reward in training. That really, really helps with the training. And the same thing then if dogs, you know, for our mobility dogs, they need to be able to pick up items, keys, cell phones, you know, that type of thing. Remote controls, and so they need to have a good retrieve drive where you just throw a ball out there and they go run and get it, bring it back to you. So we go, okay, great, we can work with this dog.
Do they are they trained for protection service dogs? I mean, if someone
no.
came up really too close, or so would it? I mean, would a dog would it be react to it, or what would it be depend on each would it, each individual's animal? What would happen?
Well, we don't teach them to be protective. That's a whole different program. A service dog should never be taught to bite and be protective in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we did in the past, and that's what we do with other dogs for personal protection. But a service dog, no, absolutely not. We do teach the dogs on the cover. When they say, cover me, we will teach the dog to speak. And that's all he's doing is barking and speaking, and he gets a treat thrown to him because we teach the dogs to catch. So we'll tell them. And so when somebody walks up closer than 3 feet to the person, the dog will automatically start barking. And all he's expecting is a treat. But people don't know that, and they're going to back up.
Yes. Yes. So people, I mean, there was a horrible story on the news a couple of weeks ago about a man who had his dog on a subway, and there, it was, of course, very crowded, and another man was either frightened or annoyed about the person with their dog there, their service dog, and he asked them to, you know, can you move? And there really wasn't much place to move, and he ended up physically assaulting the dog and the person. And I'm sure he's saying he felt the dog was, you know, threatening him or was going to attack him. And I think people really need to know that's not what the dogs are trained for, especially if it's a service dog. It's not going to be attacking you if it gets that close to you.
No, absolutely not. Actually, the dogs are trained to ignore and be neutral about other things in their environment. So the dog really shouldn't even be looking at that person. They should be paying attention to his handler. Just like you said, Indy was doing with Glenn, even with all those people there, 200 people. You know, her job and focus was on him, and you saw that. And so that's what should be happening. And so the handler should be able to redirect the dog back to him. And we use the word watch. And so when I say watch, the dog looks at me. And so there is no threat then. If the dog's not even looking at another person, there's really no threat. And so that kind of thing shouldn't happen. Also, when a dog is in their training vest, in their service dog vest, they're a different dog. And they learn that real quick. So when you put that vest on, they know they're working. And so they're not allowed to go potty. Okay? They're not allowed to solicit being petted. People should not pet them when their vest is on, and they're focused on you and they're working. So let's say, for instance, you're in the restaurant with the dog, and you see the dog getting a little restless. You think, okay, she might have to go potty. So you would take the dog outdoors, go to the proper location to do that, take the vest off, tell her to go potty, and then when she does, praise her, put the vest back on, go back to work, and go back in the restaurant. So they learn that real quick.
I mean, that's amazing that they really learn not to go to the bathroom when they have that vest on. That's not the time.
Absolutely.
But I guess they will notify you and be a little squirmish or as a handler, you would start to recognize their signs when they have to go and to be able to take
exactly
them outside
right.
And let them do that.
That's exactly right.
So it's really
right.
Reading the handler, reading the animal.
Yes, you hit it right on the head. Exactly what happens is as that team bonds, they learn each other and they learn their moves, their body language, and it really becomes a really good solid team that works together, and it's really nice. Then you know you're really getting somewhere.
Yes, and it really shows the respect between both of them and that the dog is really serious about what they're doing, that this is really a serious job and really cares for their handler and really understands that this is a serious job that they're doing.
Yeah, and just think about it. The dog literally is with them, pretty much 24/7. So, the dog needs to have some off time, of course. So, let's turn the dog loose in the yard and play, go out and play ball with the dog, throw the ball around, whatever. Have some fun, hang out in the house, have the vest off, of course, up on the couch with you, whatever you want to do in your personal life that way. And when that vest is off, he's a normal dog. Just have a good time and play. The vest goes on, it's like putting your uniform on. I'm going to work.
Yes. So Mary Kay in the chat room had another question. So can you walk a service dog without the vest on just for, just to go for a walk, as a regular dog would go for a walk to go to the bathroom? Does a service dog still have those type of treatment too, that they can go for walks without their vest on?
Absolutely. Yeah, they can be a dog. But when you want them to board for you, then that vest goes on.
Wow. That's amazing. How many dogs at a time do you have? Do you have a huge kennel or acres of land at your place that you have all these dogs on or board them?
Well, we have 24 dogs in the program right now. And that includes the dogs that people have of their own that they keep at home and they come to our classes. That includes three puppies with puppy raisers. And that includes then our dogs that we are keeping and training in the program. And, yes, we have a little over an acre ourselves. And then our training facility, we're fortunate to have 52 acres and a really, really nice training area. So we're real lucky.
And I think people really need to understand is when I was speaking to you at the fundraiser for Glenn, these dogs are worth a lot of money, obviously, with all this training. They're worth a lot of money.
Right.
But the people, the handlers, really aren't paying that amount of money, that you're really doing a lot of this out of your own passion and your own hard work.
Well, that's true, and thank you for that. But that's the reason that the Patriotic Service Dog Foundation was formed. Was the mission statement for the Patriotic Service Dogs is to provide these dogs at little or no money to the veteran. And that's really what we try to do. And so the dog typically is $20,000 to $30,000if we budget it out that way. And so what we ask out of the veteran and the recipient is to do what you can to be invested in this yourself. We don't put any demands. We don't put any dollar amount that we need you to provide, but we ask you to get involved. There's a lot of work in this. There's a lot to do. So get involved. Go to your church. Maybe do a little fundraiser like that. Do, have a pie sale or, a car wash, something. And the reason more than anything is that we know you really want it. It's human nature. If you just get something given to you and not have to work for it at all, it's just a different attitude. And that's part of why I want to meet with these people in person and talk to them. And this is what I tell them. You're not going to have to pay for this dog. We have help for you that way. But we do ask in return that if you're local, then when we go to a different events and sponsor events like that, fundraisers, then come and attend. Support us. Let people see you and your dog, and let them know that how happy you are with what's going on. So it basically helps promote what we're doing so we get other people involved.
Yes. And after a dog has been with a handler, do they have to kind of come back for, continuing education or follow-ups or being, checked back in with you and kind of recertify, keep the dog still, recertifying and working?
Absolutely. Our certifications are valid for 1 year, and they need to get recertified at that point. So whether that means coming to us going to them, we're considering doing it on Skype, because sometimes, we've got a couple people in New York, for instance. We've got another one in Louisiana. And so it's difficult financially and getting time away to be able to come back here and get recertified. So we're trying to work that out where we can start doing it via the Internet. So it's an 18-step test. So, there's a lot to it.
Yes. And is it a very intensive test for the recertification? What type of things does someone have to perform?
It's the same test. It's a complete reevaluation, recertification.
Okay. And has there been times where you've done a recertification and a dog has had to be taken back or anything like that?
No, actually the people keep in touch with us a lot. We keep in touch with them. They contact us. If they have any problems, I ask them to video it, show me what's going on, and then we walk them through it. So we have a good relationship with everybody that we've worked with, and it's very personal to us. You work with these people that long, you become friends with them.
Yes.
And that's another thing that I talk about when we've done our initial meeting is, this is a long process, so we need to know each other. You need to like me and like what the program you're getting involved in, and we need to know who we're working with, and so we can work cohesively.
Yes. I think it's really important, too, and I think it's really incredible, though, that you are really, really hands-on with the dog, with the people that are the handlers that are getting the dog, because I think that's so important, too, for both people, and also that people can contact you back again when they have questions, because I would think someone who just never had a dog before and their service dog is their first time and they're suffering from PTSD and other things,
right.
I mean, that's like a double fold of different things to kind of take on.
Yeah, I agree. When I was training the police dogs, I saw a similar situation there that I didn't want to duplicate in here with the service dogs. Is when I was hired on, the department had a two-week program, training program, and then the handler and dog were on the street. And they were having problems because, again, 2 weeks, what are you going to learn? We turned it into a 16-week program and hands-on every day training the dogs and virtually had, no problems compared to in the past. So when I got started with the service dogs, I want to do the same thing because there are other groups that, they fly out to you with the dog or you fly back to them and you spend a 3 or 4 day weekend and then that's it, you're gone. And that can really create a lot of problems. It's impossible to learn everything that needs to be taught and learned in that short a time. I mean, like I said, Glenn has come out, he's going to come out 3 times and work with us like almost 2 weeks each time. So there's almost 6 weeks of training with him just in doing that part of it.
Yes. I mean, if you really think about it, it's very serious what these dogs are being trained. It's not just, learning how to sit and lie down and, stay. These are really serious commands, serious tasks that they have to perform, that have to really, that the owner, that the handler also has to learn how to teach the dog or to work with the dog so the dog can react to it.
Absolutely. For instance, turning on the lights or touching the buttons to open up the handicap doors. It needs to be practiced. It's like anything else. They need to practice it, but they need to know how to practice it. Practice it properly so the dog stays sharp. So there is a lot to it, but it is a lot of fun. It's very challenging and yet rewarding to the handlers. We just placed a dog in Louisiana with a captain there, and excuse me, he has PTSD really bad, and he took Bo home October, and we were in touch almost every day. And so it was like almost 2 weeks after he took Bo home, he calls me and said, Tom, I trashed my anxiety meds. So in 2 weeks, Bo got him off of his meds. And our slogan for Patriotic Service Dog Foundation is 22-0. And what that refers to is 22 veterans a day commit suicide. And our goal is to make that zero. And so far, every veteran that I know of that's received a dog has not committed suicide.
Incredible. And I think that's what's so amazing, that people really need to understand, especially people who are not animal lovers, who don't understand the importance and the power of a dog, of an animal, that this is real. This is not some, oh, I just want some animal. This, it really is a huge, huge task and really helps people. It's really an essential tool, something to the point where I feel that insurance should be covering and reimbursing for service dogs, therapy dogs, because it really, as you said, it changes people's lives. How it would be so incredible if people didn't really have to take medication or could lower their medication and have a dog and have a trained service dog to help them with the anxiety or the PTSD.
You know where the problem comes in with that, Alexa, is one, of course, pharmaceutical companies wouldn't like that idea too much, but the insurance companies, to me, would benefit really huge by doing that and accepting that. But the problem is so far the dogs are not completely accepted as a cure. The VA doesn't recognize it. They're beginning to, and there's programs, they're doing studies right now on it. And I really believe in the next, hopefully 2 to 5 years, that dogs will be recognized as a cure. And so it'll help, get rid of all the meds that they're giving them. Because that's pretty much what happens. They go to their therapy appointments and they get medications. And, then they're typically changing the medications because they're not working and trying to experiment with which ones might work. But so far, when they get a dog, is all the cortisol levels level out. It's just amazing difference.
Well, I think it's the environmental, it's the everyday life that the dog is addressing, is working with the person. Yes, the medication can help take the edge off and help you think clearly, but the everyday anxieties, the triggers, that it won't.
Right.
As I said, medication alone doesn't prevent anything. It's medication, therapy, treatment. Programs, service dogs, therapy dogs, because I think that is an everyday thing where that the person feels safe. They feel a connection to be able to walk into a room or, to go to the bank machine. I mean, these people take for granted, but for someone who is suffering from anxiety, PTSD, these are huge, huge life-changing events to be able to go to the store on their own or walk down the street by themselves and not have a severe panic attack or be hypervigilant or have a flashback.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what happens is they typically don't go out too often other than when they have to. And so it doesn't really help because they're not used to getting out. And so the dog changes all of that, just like you were saying. The dog has to get out. They got to go for a walk. They've got to get exercise. And so now they go out. They do this. They feel more comfortable, like you were saying, in the environment. And next thing you know, somebody is saying, wow, what a beautiful dog. What do you got going there? And so now all of a sudden they're engaged in conversation with this total stranger, whereas that would never have happened.
Mm-hmm. And it's getting them out of the house. I think that's so huge.
Right.
As clients that I have in my private practice or with depression, anxiety, who don't leave the house. It just even if you go walk down the street and walk back, that's a huge, huge goal. But I think sometimes when you have a dog and you're walking down the street, you start forgetting that, I'm anxious. The dog walks a little bit further. You get excited. Your focus changes. And you actually feel
right.
Like you have an importance, because a lot of times people don't feel like they have an impact. They feel like they're invisible. They feel like they don't matter. And I'm a huge animal lover. That the love of an animal, that the enjoyment when they see you, the excitement and how intelligent they are is really amazing and life-changing.
Yes, it really is. It also what happens on the other end of that is it allows them to sleep better. They feel safer. The dog will warn them if anything is going on. One of our other guys, a Vietnam veteran, After 40 years of suffering, he found us and we got him a dog. And he told us, like, the third night she was home with him is the first time in 40 years that he slept with the light off.
Wow.
Yeah.
The trust. I mean, that is just incredible.
And so think about that, too. You know this. If you get a great night's sleep, you're going to be happier, healthier. Everything's going to work better for you. And so night after night, you're doing that instead of constantly waking up, like you said, hypervigilant, any sound at all. And most of them sleep with a gun in their pillow, you know, lights on, doors completely locked up. And so now things just start loosening up. They relax. They sleep night after night. They're happier. They've got smiles on their faces. Their eyes are completely different. When I first meet them, quite often their eyes are just like blank to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And after some of us were just talking about one of our guys today, watching him. He's out there laughing and talking with people in the class. And when he first came out a few months ago, he wouldn't say a word. And now he's just having a great time. He's got a big old smile on his face. It's beautiful to see. He's relaxing and enjoying coming out there.
Yes. And they're truly, genuinely enjoying it. And I think they've come out of themselves where they're able to actually start functioning and start to laugh, start to smile, which I bet they haven't in a very, very long time. And I think those are those moments where they start saying, wow, you know, life is really worth living. This is really, you know, I have a reason to live. This dog is, you know, I'm taking care of it. This dog is great. There's hope. And I think it's very important. So they can really change somebody and save somebody's life.
Yeah, our guy Phil, the Vietnam veteran I was telling you about, that slept for the first time with the light off. When he first started coming up to us, he doesn't drive, so he rides the bus. So he takes the bus up every morning, comes up and trains with us. And I would typically take him home. I didn't want to ride the bus home, so I would take him home. Like the third or fourth day I'm taking him home, he's just talking away and laughing. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, Tom. I go, what? He says, I'm talking your head off. He says, I never talk. He says, this is great. He says, I haven't laughed, and I can't remember when. And I kind of slapped him on the shoulder and said, that's what it's all about, Bill. It's just a great feeling.
Yes. I think it's important for anyone, for themselves or if they have a loved one who's suffering from PTSD or depression or anxiety, to really look at those things, that it's important that they have that interaction and not have the isolation. And I think interacting with a dog, interacting with an animal, it helps them start to realize that they have hope and that there's things to look forward to.
Absolutely. You know, they can let loose right away to a dog. They can't do that with people.
Yes.
So they can start letting their feelings out and showing love to another, you know, animal.
Yes. And I think the animal letting them love them. I think that's I think sometimes when someone's had a lot of pain, it's almost scared or you forgot how to love. You don't know how to love yourself, so you really don't know how to love something else in such a long time because of pain or trauma. And to be able just to have that unconditional love for an animal and see that you make this animal so happy is powerful.
Right. It is. It is. It's seeing it in person is just amazing. I'm really glad that you and I were able to meet at that event and you just see it in person with Glenn and Indy.
Yes, it was breathtaking. It was really, really amazing. The smile on his face. He was just so proud. He was shining. He was glowing, and the dog was glowing. I mean, the dog was excited and happy, and you could tell it was so focused and. Yes, it was work for the dog, but the dog loved it. It wasn't like the dog was miserable. I mean, the dog was looking at him like he couldn't wait for the next move.
Right. And again, that's our fundamental part of our training is teaching the dog to focus and pay attention and look to you for direction. What do you want me to do? But it's in a happy way. It's not like, oh, gosh, I'm going to get in trouble. It's absolutely, there's a bond there, and you know, that's what is, you know, you're the boss. You know, what do you want me to do? I'll do anything for you.
Yes. Now, working with children who have autism, what have you seen with the dogs with those children? How has that been?
Well, you know, a similar thing, but just obviously in a little different way. But what happens with kids with autism is what the dogs really do for them is is really helps them and increase some of their safety and helps alleviate the bolting behaviors. And, you know, kids with autism will just all of a sudden just bolt away. And they typically don't do that when they have their dog. They want to be around their dog, and the dog stays with them. We even teach the dog to stop. So if they're walking the dog and they start to take off, we have a stop command, and the dog will just stop, and the child can't pull the dog out of position or anything, so, you know, they're there. So it really creates a lot more freedom for the family to be able to get out and do things more. What happens, too, with the kids is they, again, start having people say, wow, what a nice dog, and so now they start talking more. Because, you know, a lot of the kids with autism are more withdrawn. They don't want to talk. They want to make eye contact. So it changes that. People start talking to them. Oh, what a beautiful dog. Oh, yeah, that's my dog. And so they just start talking. And then there was a woman and a professor at Montreal University performed a study on 42 kids with autism. And she measured the cortisol levels of them prior to giving them a dog. And then also after, okay? So, prior to giving them the dog, and then during when they had the dog, they tested the cortisol levels again, and then they tested them again when they took the dogs away. And the levels went from 52% without the dogs down to 10% typically with the dogs, and then went back up again when the dogs were gone. So, as you know, the cortisol levels are the stress hormone. So that's what happens with these kids is, again, they don't sleep well at night quite often, and their levels are just like a roller coaster. So it causes a lot of confusion. And so the dogs really, really slow that down and keep it more level, which is huge.
Yes. Now, with a child who has autism, would it be a regular basis? Would this child take the dog to school? Would it be an ongoing companionship with this dog? Because I know a lot of schools might not say, oh, people could be allergic, but what if it's a service dog? Is that child allowed to take that dog to school with them every day?
Legally, yes. Some schools do fight it. We do have some dogs in the schools. And like I said, we have our own reading program in the school. So they can put up a fuss about it. And, you know, some parents, I agree, that if their child has allergies, then, yeah, that could be a problem. So try to be cooperative and, you know, separate them a bit. But that's why we like the doodles a lot for the autism, because they're pretty much non-shedding and more hypoallergenic than other breeds.
Yes. So there's always a way. And I think also if it's a lot of times with children with autism, there's a lot of acting out. There's some physical acting out, which
right.
they would have to
right.
be separated anyway. So it's almost like, could there be a group? I mean, this is something schools should think about with those who have the dogs and those who are allergic and kind of set that. I mean, it would be easier for the teachers. It would be easier for everyone else and really be a gift to those children.
Oh, absolutely. It's tremendous. Another thing we'll do with some of them, parents agree to it. In fact, usually the parents want it, is we will tether the dog to the child. And the kids wear a belt leash, and they walk with the dog then that way. If they really bolt a lot, then gradually they would take it off, and they just stick right with the dog.
Well, I think also that is so incredible of teaching them about personal space, teaching them about their own personal space, social cues, movement, being aware of their body and how it moves, because they can see how the dog reacts to it, listens, stops. So I think a lot of times they have difficulty reading their body cues, reading other people's body cues. So this dog is really helping them as a tool of educating them how to read signals and cues. This is too close. This is too far away. Don't go up and grab someone and hug them. You know, that you have to
right.
you have to read people and take a step back.
Yes, absolutely. You know, another thing that we found, it's amazing. We've had parents and come out, even grandparents, with the child in our first interview to meet the dogs and see how they are with the dogs. And I remember this one, I believe he was like either five or seven years old. And they came out and introduced the dog. And within, 30 seconds, the child reached over and kissed him on the nose. And the mom and grandmother both started crying because the mother said, he has never kissed me once.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just
so they can
incredible.
again, they can just let their emotions go, and it relaxes them. We've got another child we worked with that he didn't like to be touched typically, right? And they won't look you in the eye. And by the time we were finished training, he and I were really good buddies. We would like wrestle around and high five and just, like buds, we'd walk, I put my arm around him and we walk, and he's comfortable with it. It wasn't just like, oh, okay, Tom's got his arm around me. It was like we became really good friends, and just because of the dog.
Yes. It just allows them, and I think it just allows them to be vulnerable in a way that with people they might not be able to.
Exactly. Absolutely right.
What would you say to someone who has a loved one or a child that would think a service dog would be great for them, but the person never had animals or is not an animal lover? Would that be a problem?
Not necessarily, no. No, in fact, Milan, who was one of the first Marines we worked with, his service dog, Brody, the first dog he's ever owned. And he's great with them. In fact, he's becoming one of our trainers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's actually going to open up a division of Tackett Service Dogs in Washington State. We're going to call it Tackett Service Dogs of Pacific Northwest.
Wow. Now, do you have location? Are you planning on doing location state to state? Because I can imagine every state, every county would need something as a Tackett Service Dog.
Well, we would like that if that could come about. It's not that easy. The training, takes a long time to learn to be a trainer, to be able to do this and get into it. So, we would like that. There's another group in Dallas area that we've worked with that I would love to open up a branch there. I think that'd be really good. So I'm open to it, but it's really not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
But there is such a demand.
Is it more of a financial difficulty, or is it just hard with all the training?
Yes, it's the training. It's teaching somebody how to really do this. It takes a long time. Well, Milan's been with us for, 2.5 years, 3 years.
Wow.
And he's really getting good now, and he's got it down where he can do it on his own.
So what you do is really unique and specialized.
It is, but I mean, it's a lot of it is having just a natural feel and touch for a dog, and the big part of it is being able to read a dog, seeing what they need, and doing what they need when they need it, so it makes them feel good, so the training is fun. So training and learning should be fun for the dog, along with the handler, but if we're teaching the dog, we really, really make sure that they're having a good time, and they're learning what they need to learn, and like doing it, so they're reliable with it. When you need them to be.
Yes. If someone wants to find out more about your organization or contact you, where would they go?
TackettServiceDogs.com.
Okay. And if someone wanted to make a donation or any type, or wanted to have a fundraiser, would they go to the same site?
No, you could go to PatrioticServiceDogFoundation.org.
Okay. And if someone was interested in being qualified for a service dog, would you tell them first to go to their primary care doctor? Would they have to go have a psychiatrist? What would be helpful in this process and necessary?
Well, in most cases, somebody with PTSD already has a psychiatrist, psychologist, counselor. Anyway. So that's there. But I would say the best thing to do is just get a hold of us, contact us, email, phone call, and, let me talk to you and interview you and see where we're at, see if we can help you. And if we can, we'd love to. And if it's something that won't work out for us, maybe I can refer you to somebody else that could.
Okay. So they would definitely, someone would need to have a diagnosis that was, if they have all the symptoms, they haven't been to a doctor yet, but you would want someone who would have already confirmed diagnosis that has been seen by a mental health or a medical professional.
Correct. Part of our prerequisite is fill out the application, and we need a letter from the doctor stating they feel a service dog would benefit you.
Okay.
And then from there, we'll
meet you. Yes, and I think then you would speak, they would speak to you, and then the next step would, I guess, to come meet you.
Correct.
Wow. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was just so incredible, and what you do is just amazing.
Well, thank you, Alexis. Really great. Really nice to meet you last month. That was great, and I really appreciate you having us on. Really do.
Yes, definitely. Well, again, I wanted to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. If you have any questions, you can send them to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a good night, and God bless.